All right, this is a Las Vegas Sun podcast, The Rebel Room. I'm Ray Brewer alongside Mike Germala, talking all things UNLV athletics. And Mike, it seems kind of fitting. We're in the middle of November, the time when traditionally all eyes go from football to the enthusiasm of basketball. And a week and a half ago, we didn't think we'd be there yet. We said, okay, the football season is in bowl contention. They got to beat Hawaii. They got to beat Reno to go to a bowl game. And there's some excitement. And then last night happened. UNLV beats the 21st ranked team in the nation in Dayton. They're 3-0 with Kevin Kruger. And I think the buzz today is all basketball, right?
I would say so. I mean, it's got to be. You know, the football team is, they're still in it, you know, but they haven't won a game in a month and a half. Whereas basketball all of a sudden is 3-0. They just beat a ranked team. And the way they did it was pretty exciting. You know, a 12-point comeback in the second half. And their defense just looks unbelievable through three games. So, yeah, basketball surging, a lot of excitement. You could definitely feel a little bit of a buzz leaving the arena last night after they pulled off that win.
Which, so I was watching the game at home, watched the first half, and I composed a few tweets where I was like, okay, you're getting out rebounded 15-5. You're not guarding the perimeter, you know, and then I didn't send it. And then I was going to send another one with like, really wasted an opportunity. If you wanted any chance of an at-large bid, you had to at least show up, blah, blah, blah. Then I went to bed. They didn't score the last 6 minutes of the first half. I was really upset when McCabe came in and threw that behind the back pass out of bounds. And then they kept him in the game and he throws another behind the back pass in the corner. I'm like, you're down by 12. Why are you doing the behind the back stuff? Right. So I turn the game off. I go to bed. I wake up. There's a text on my phone. Hey, what'd you think of the game? How about the win? And I'm like, they won the game? What happened? And and there you have it, a tale of two halves. And UNLV's 3-0, they got to be feeling pretty good about themselves, all thanks to that defense.
Yeah, and I would think the biggest takeaway that you've got to be encouraged by is that it wasn't just like a fluke that, oh, they played great defense and that's why they won. It's the fact that this is what they were built to do. You know, all offseason, this was the plan. This is why they recruited these players. This was the blueprint, if you will. And so to see them not just win a game and beat a ranked opponent, but to do it the way they intended to do it, step by step, is pretty exciting because it makes you think that they've got a formula that they can follow. And I think Kevin Kruger hit on that in his press conference last night. He said something to the effect of, if this can be our baseline performance going forward, we'll win a lot of games. And that's exciting because they didn't do something crazy. They didn't beat Dayton by making 23 pointers. And you sit here today going, well, it's great that they had a great shooting game, but they can't do that ever again. That was a one-time thing. The fact that they did it by doing something that they are built to do makes you think that they could probably do this against everyone in the Mountain West and everyone that's left on the non-conference schedule. So I think that's pretty exciting the way that they were able to do it. And it makes you have more optimism for them going forward.
Yeah. So I don't disagree with anything you said. The defense was inspiring. The fact that they executed their game plan, kept the game kind of from being a shootout, inspiring. Even if you look at the first three games, they've had what, 63 steals or something in three games. Another thing to be inspired by, and I don't want to say but, because when you say but, that means you say everything you just said doesn't mean anything because of what I'm about to say. But are you at all worried that the team is just not built to score, that they can't shoot the ball?
And of course.
There's times when they go down the court and you're like, huh, I wonder who's going to score, because there's really not a scorer in the game.
Of course, because they built a team basically of defensive specialists. They're not a lot of offensive players. You saw they scored 60 to beat Dayton, and 40 of those points combined were from two players, EJ Harkless and Keyshawn Gilbert. They combined for 40. The entire rest of the team scored 20. Is it really sustainable to have two guys responsible for two-thirds of your offensive production? No, they are going to need different guys to step up on different nights. So, yes, of course you're concerned, because there's always the potential that you can waste a great defensive performance if you're not making shots. Like, we saw them score 20 points in the first half. If they had only scored 20 points in the second half, they would have lost the game. And we would have all been saying, oh, man, they held Dayton to such low percentages and they forced all these turnovers and they wasted it because they didn't score. So that and that's going to happen at some point this year. They're going to play San Diego State. They're going to lose 49-45. And we're all going to say, like, man, they just got to get some shooting. Where's it going to come from? But I'm less concerned about it than I was before the Dayton game, because I think I thought their defense could be pretty good, but just to see them reach that level where they shut Dayton out for the last 7 minutes, no field goals.
Is this team better than last year's team?
For sure. They've got to be 100%, right?
I mean, last year's team had three legit players.
They did.
Royce Hamm, who was great on the inside, Bryce Hamilton, first team all league, and Donovan Williams, who's, you know, almost made the NBA.
Yes. I think that what you saw, they don't have the guy. You know what? I was going to say they don't have the go-to guy that like Hamilton, but EJ Harkless did a pretty good impression against Dayton, where there were times in the second half where they were just tossing him the ball and spreading the floor and saying, hey, drive one-on-one. And he would pull up for a little mid-range or pump fake and draw a foul. And he gave you 24 points against a pretty good team. So he's not Bryce Hamilton, but if he can get you a couple buckets down the stretch, Keyshawn Gilbert keeps shooting the ball. Their roster is just so much stronger. It's so much more cohesive. As like, they may have had more individual talent last year, which I'm not even sure of, but they might have. But there were just so many pieces that were mismatched. I don't think they have that this year. Pretty much everyone fits into a role. And not to get too far ahead of myself, but like, I think you saw it against Dayton. Like, they just had enough guys to where they could each do their thing, and it added up to a win.
Yeah, and that's, of course, without Isaiah Cottrell, who's still banged up to start the season. The one thing that I do find interesting about Keyshawn Gilbert is a guy who went from being like a career third point guard to being one of the best two players on the team. And the improvements the guy made from last year to this year, and you even saw it kind of a little bit at the end of last year, the strides that he's made. But to see that come into play this year is great. It speaks a lot about Kevin and his staff that has turned over so many times that they're able to develop a kid who comes here into a good player. I worry, though, he fouled out last night. He plays tough defense. That always leads to fouls. And he's a guy they're clearly going to need on the court. How do you kind of tame him down but keep him the same aggressive defender on the ball? Because if he fouls out late against San Diego State, I mean, they couldn't get the ball up the court at the end of the game last night.
Yeah. So the first thing I would say to sort of quell your concerns about what do they do if he fouls out is they're pretty deep at that. If you're just talking about, you mentioned, you know, he's on the ball, he's defending the ball. If he's on the bench or if he's, you know, fouled out or he's in foul trouble, you can put Eli Parquet on the ball and he'll play pretty good defense. We've seen him smother ball handlers. You can move Luis Rodriguez over there and put him on the ball. And he's so long and he deflects everything. You can put EJ Harkless on the, like, they have so many guys who are capable of doing that. And they're deep. So I think, like, you know, do you want him to foul out? No. I would say the bigger concern, as you also touched on, is, and it looks like he's taking on a bigger offensive role this year. And they don't, whereas they do have other defenders who can step up. I don't think they have other scorers who can step up. You know, he's averaging what, 18 points through the first three games. He's been their leading scorer twice. He scored 16 against Dayton. He's taken a huge step on the offensive end. That's where I would be concerned. If he's in trouble or if he has an off shooting night, who replaces that production? I don't know about that, but yeah, incredible leap for him this year. He's playing so well through the first three games. I think like without him, they don't win that game. So it'll be interesting to see how much he can sustain this going forward, if this is for real or if he's just shooting the ball really hard right now. But I mean, it looks real to me.
Yeah. So just taking a quick look at the schedule. And of course it's very forgiving. High Point on Friday, Southern Illinois on Monday, Life Pacific on Saturday after Thanksgiving. That's a what, NAIA school?
I believe so. It's not Division I, I don't think.
Okay. And then San Diego on the next Saturday, the 3rd.
First road game, true road game.
Yeah. And then Hawaii at Dollar Loan Center before they get Washington State, which is enough. I mean, the schedule, Michael, is so.
Show me the team that they should lose to on that schedule. I don't see one.
Well, with all that said, the game here against San Francisco on the 17th could be a challenge. But, yeah, then they got San Diego State home on New Year's Eve and then at New Mexico 7 days later and then Boise State here. I also don't like that they play three of their first – league games at home, right?
Yeah. I mean, we'll see when they get into league.
I mean, this schedule is so bad. They could be undefeated going into the championship game of the Mountain West tournament and still not make the tournament.
Wow. You took a huge leap there. I thought I was getting way out ahead of myself just by implying that they could run the table in non-conference. You're going all the way through the Mountain West schedule. I'm just looking at these 11 non-conference games, and you know, San Francisco doesn't look as good as last year, but I believe they're 3-0. Washington State just lost to, I think, like Prairie View A&M. You know, San Diego is they get a new coach. They could be interesting, but yeah, I mean, Minnesota's a power conference team. If they might play them in that so-called challenge, so. But I'm looking at the schedule. I'm like, I don't see the obvious loss in the non-conference schedule. So I mean, if they're 11-0 after this, or maybe even 10-1, you got to start thinking like they're in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, of course, last year the Mountain West was so bad in the NCAA tournament, it's not going to give any favors to UNLV. Even though the committee theoretically doesn't look at past years, but we know that's not the case. I mean, I guess the next step for them is to start blowing out some of these teams. Like, instead of just, you know, they play High Point on Friday. Instead of beating High Point, they need to win by 20. It's like, you know, Florida State back in the day trying to get into the BCS football game where they're, you know, running up the score on people.
That is a factor in the computer rankings. And I do agree with you. That's one thing. It's kind of tough for them to do because they don't have an explosive offense, but you're right. You know, Hawaii, Washington, like when they get these teams, they've got to start racking up some convincing wins. And I think you'll start see them rising up the Ken Palm and the net rating when it comes out. But
what a fun little spot. San Diego State, New Year's Eve at the MAC, in the holiday spirit. You know, that's a great opportunity to prove yourself.
I was just gonna say, in your mind, is that the tipping point game? Like, I feel like there's a lot of momentum coming off this Dayton win because they've got that ranking next to their name. They were the number 21 team. Mm-hmm. But do you feel like, I don't see another game on the schedule that is going to get people excited until that San Diego State game. So if they go into that San Diego State game with, you know, one loss or zero losses and they win that game, do you feel like that's the tipping point where people are going to say like, hey, this team's for real. Let's jump on the bandwagon.
Well, I mean, I think two things. One, let's hope that San Diego State remains ranked until then, because if UNLV is in the position of trying to accumulate impressive wins. So to say that you've beaten two ranked opponents, even though both were at home, does help enhance the resume. And then I think, you know, if UNLV is undefeated, you know, of course, I believe the Golden Knights play that day. Their typical are you blind to the fact that when the Golden Knights are at home, it hurts the UNLV attendance?
You know, I'm kind of a believer that there obviously is some crossover, but I do think those fan bases are different enough that, like we saw at the Thomas and Mac last night, the Golden Knights were playing. Golden Knights were at home last night.
Yeah, against San Jose, yeah.
And that was UNLV's biggest crowd of the season by far. Like their first two games, it's only three games, but the first two games were lightly attended, you know, 2,000, 2,500, 3,000 people, something like that, actual bodies in the seats. And then for Dayton, that was, you know, probably 8, 9,000, maybe approaching 10. So that was it was a palpable, it was a tangible difference in the arena. Like 20 minutes before tip off, you just looked around the stands and you said, wow, there's a lot more people here than a normal game in recent years. So I don't think that, I think if UNLV gets back to that point where they are a draw, I don't think you're going to see that much competition between the two fan bases in terms of live attendance. I think UNLV can still carve out a niche for itself. Yeah. If they're good. You know what? You know, one thing that it did when I saw that crowd before the game, it made me think, like, why do they should play good teams more often? Why is this the only team that they're playing in non-conference? That's what it made me think.
Yeah. And so I don't know the science behind scheduling and who ultimately decides. And, you know, I do know that, like, when Dave Rice was the coach, they were going out of their way to play at North Carolina or in whatever tournaments or what have you. Whereas when Marvin was the coach, maybe not as much. And I think there's multiple ways to approach a season. You know, one way, of course, is you want to try to, you know, the whole purpose is to get better to where you're hot in March, right? And if you're in a one bid league where the whole season's going to come down to three nights in March, you know, go out and play the best to get ready for those three nights in March. But if you're in the Mountain West, which, you know, for many years in succession has gotten multiple bids, there is some merit to having a balance of games that you could win to enhance your resume and games that could get you better. And I think obviously they're lacking the latter. You know, they're probably going to be a confident bunch heading into the San Diego State game. But I'd be interested to see what their RPI was, if they still use that.
Yeah, maybe that's something we'll see in future years. Maybe it's a case where Kevin Kruger wants to get things on track and then maybe start increasing the difficulty of the schedule. But it did, yeah, just seeing the feel inside the arena made me sort of wish that they had another Dayton on the schedule. It's not like Dayton is a name brand team. They're just a good, solid team that is ranked.
Yeah, like when Arizona came in a while, like a year ago or 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Arizona was ranked. There was a good crowd. The game went down to the buzzer.
The Brandon McCoy team. That game went to overtime. That was a good game. Yeah. So like if they could start mixing in some games like that, but there really isn't one until San Diego State. And that's, you know, that's on New Year's Eve. So that's still a month and a half away. So, but yeah, I do think UNLV is probably going to be in a pretty good position record wise going into that one.
Okay. So let's shift gears. Football. Like you said, they haven't won in a month and a half. The season's going to come down to 2 weeks against Hawaii, again at Hawaii, at home against Reno. Two teams that they're better than. Now all they got to do is go out and win. Of course, as we've long established, we're pretty afraid of UNLV, a team with no history or tradition of winning, having to play a desperation game, and it's here.
It's here, times two. You got to win two of them.
Yeah.
That's the bad news, that they've suddenly put themselves up against the wall where they have no margin for error. But the good news is I do think they have margin for error because they're playing two of the three worst teams in the conference, and they are going to be double-digit favorites in both games. I don't think they need to play perfectly to win them. So could something go wrong? Yes. But I do think they are still in a pretty good position. I don't think we need to start getting fatalistic or start saying, like, same old UNLV. We know what's going to happen here. We know how this is going to play out. Heartbreak City, here it comes. I don't think we're quite there yet. Are you there? Is that where you are? Are you going into this Hawaii game just expecting?
I mean, I know a lot of born and raised locals who live and die with the program. And I know one guy I talked to who would rather have them lose on Saturday at Hawaii than be forced to have to play Reno in a win to go to a bowl game scenario, where we could just make Reno the bowl game, try to finish 5-7 and pack up the van for next year, because
you just they don't even want the possibility of Reno playing spoiler, Reno being the team correct that UNLV out of whole season.
These are the same people that would rather see a three-pointer made in every home in every basketball game than a win. So you kind of know where the logic is with this club. But it's, again, it's, I was so in 2020, the COVID year, and I know that UNLV was decimated and that they barely had enough Jimmy's people on the roster to play. But Reno beat them so bad, and the lack of reaction from the program made me sick to my stomach. I mean, I thought that was a gigantic black eye. And I don't know, Mike, if I'm overreacting, but I just don't feel, at least in the first two Marcus Aurora seasons, that he's cared about beating Reno. I really don't. I to him, it's just another game. I may be wrong. He may want to, you know, it's not Ohio State, Michigan. It's not Oregon State. But to us here in Nevada, it means everything, man. And, you know, I watched, like, Bobby Houck embrace the rivalry and Tony embrace the rivalry, and it meant something. And then for 2 years, have people not care about it. That's like embarrassing to us locals, you know, and then you parlay that to the fact, as you wrote about in your story, that he's lightly recruited the area. And it's like, you know what I'm saying? And that doesn't sit well with us. And so, and that's where we're at. I sure in the hell hope they beat Hawaii and have a chance to beat Reno to go to a bowl. Maybe that will now spark them to care.
You don't think that's so you, but a bowl game has to cure it all. Like, doesn't it have to be like, can't
I'd rather win the cannon than a bowl game,
but you can get both.
You can, but I'd rather win the cannon than go to a bowl game. A bowl game is, if you say at the beginning of every year, what is the goal for UNLV football? Goal number one, win the cannon. Goal number five, big drop, win the Mountain West. Goal number six, go to a bowl game.
Yeah, I think fundamentally Marcus Arroyo definitely disagrees. Like, he's that bowl game is probably the number one thing for him. And I feel like, but don't you, like, yes, he doesn't recruit locals. Yes, he's not well-liked in the community. But if he gets to six wins, beats Reno in the finale, goes to a bowl game, don't you feel like he can show up the next day at his press conference, be like, hey, we made a bowl game. We got the Fremont Cannon. Everything I did worked. Like, I'm vindicated. I'm validated.
I mean, and all credit to him. I mean, this was a team that was 4-1 6 weeks ago or whatever weeks ago. So it's not like the moves that the man make isn't working, Mike. Okay? I mean, the team is improved. They beat the teams they were supposed to beat. But now we talked earlier about momentum going into the NCAA tournament, right? Well, this UNLV football team has zero momentum right now. And that's what scares me. It's tough to lose X amount of games in a row. Now, to their credit, they were a play away a few times. Against San Diego State, they should have won. Against Fresno, they had a chance to win. By comparison, Hawaii got destroyed by Fresno. You know, now how much of that balances out with having to travel to the islands, I'm not sure. But it's just, this is not like a sure thing layup drill, right? This is not Bishop Gorman in the state championship game on Saturday. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not a cinch. It's not a lock, but it would
take. They are favored.
It would take something so dramatic for them to lose the game. Like they would need, I don't even want to go. They would take some sort of like massive incident during the game. Or like, I can't envision a scenario where they straight up play the game with all their players available and lose the game to Hawaii at this point in the season. Like you said, Hawaii just played Fresno State and got destroyed like 55-10 or 55-13, something like that. And then the following week, UNLV took Fresno State down to the wire. So like, that's the comparison between those two teams right now. Like Hawaii is barely making it to the finish line of the season. UNLV has everything to play for. They're healthier than they've been since October. Since September. Like I just see this as it's all setting up. They'll win this game easily at Hawaii, and it's all setting up for a home game against UNR with the Fremont Cannon on the sideline. Win it and you qualify for a bowl. Whether or not they get selected for a bowl game, I guess that remains to be seen. It's not a 100% guarantee, but you'll be eligible. So I do think that that's where we're heading.
Yeah, and I just want to make sure that I'm crystal clear. I was disappointed that UNLV didn't embrace the Cannon game in the last 2 years. But like I've said repeatedly on our podcast, the fact that Aurora was 4-1 and that they look good and organized, and he's really upgraded the program and the portal, is to his credit. And I hate that they lost those close games that they were in, you know, San Diego State or Fresno State, because that would have been like a team with a winning record that's traditionally good in the league that you went in, you lined up against, and you beat. And you look at the San Diego State game and just how they basically dominated the game except on the scoreboard. And then you say, well, what could go wrong against Hawaii? Well, I'll tell you what could go wrong against Hawaii. You know, look at the San Diego State game. Right? Look at the year Mike Sanford needed. He had Ryan Wolf and Casey Flair and Omar Clayton and Phil Payne, and they needed to beat in the winless San Diego State team in the last game of the season at home. Winless. They hadn't won a game, Michael. Nothing to play for. At Sam Boyd Stadium, they beat them. They beat UNLV. I'm just saying this is not – don't look at it as X's and O's. Look at it as a team that's been to 4 bowl games all time.
Listen, I am a Boston Red Sox fan from birth, so I know all about, you know, the curses, and I spent my whole life expecting them to lose no matter how – sure, it seemed, and they always did lose, and they always, just like you're saying, you always expected it, and then they always managed to lose in the worst possible way until one year they finally didn't and they won, and then all that stuff was erased. So
yeah, but UNLV doesn't have Big Poppy. Who's Big Poppy, Mike?
Maybe Doug Brumfield is their version
if he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, he hasn't been quite the same since coming back from that concussion. You could tell he's still not quite back, but they've got their full receiver.
When was the last time, Michael, sorry to cut you off. When was the last time UNLV football played in a meaningful game?
Meaningful meaning what?
a game, you know.
I think that I said that when they played San Jose State, when they were 4-1 and they played San Jose State 2 months ago, I said that I went back and I looked, and that was their first meaningful game in like 5 years.
Why would you label that a meaningful game?
Because at the time it had Mountain West implications. They were 1-0 they were 2-0 in the conference, and San Jose State was 2-0 or 3-0. And they looked like the two teams in the West Division that were going to be, you know, jockeying for position in that division. It didn't work out that way for UNLV, but that was like the first game that they played with actual stakes since the 2017 finale at UNR, when they were 5-6. And if they won that game at UNR, they would have been bowl eligible under Tony Sanchez. And they were close, and they had the ball at the end, and they were down by one possession, and they had a 4th-and-1. And I believe Lexington Thomas got the carry, and he didn't pick it up.
Tried to win the game, go right through the middle, power eye at the 20. And remember that vividly. Mike Hughes Jr.'s last game.
And that was the last meaningful game.
Yeah, before the same year they lost to Howard, by the way.
Yes. If they beat Howard, they would have been in, and that game would have been to get them.
Tony step. Might still be the coach for whatever.
It's true.
So it's just very interesting. I need to apologize to all the fans out there. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. That's not my personality. I'm generally a positive human being, but you know, as someone who went to UNLV, who grew up going to games at Sam Boyd Stadium and the Thomas and Mack, I mean, I've seen the great, like the bowl win against Arkansas when John Robinson was the coach, and when they had a rally on Fremont Street experience for Las Vegas Bowl. And Michael, it was kind of like the first gathering of UNLV fans in public since the Final Four Tar teams. And it was just packed. You would have thought that UNLV was Alabama. Okay. I've seen all the great with UNLV football. I've seen the two wins after two wins after two wins to, you know, the 1 year where we dressed out one tight end for the last game of the season. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And in my heart, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm being a reverse psychologist on purpose, but going to Hawaii against a team that's got nothing to lose, playing in one of their last games at the Brief Home Stadium, is darn scary. And then Reno, this is their bowl game, and Reno cares about beating UNLV.
Yeah, I'm not with you so much on the Hawaii one. I don't think they'll slip up there, but I hear what you're saying about UNR, because UNR is invested in that rivalry game in a way that UNLV is not invested in it. Mm-hmm. Especially under Marcus Arroyo. It's kind of just another game to them. Fremont Cannon is an afterthought. So I hear what you're saying. Like if one of those two opponents is going to play spoiler, I would put my everything on UNR being the team that gives them more of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think there's a reason to be fatalistic. I think there's like I said, to start off the whole segment, like I do think they're in good position. Like they don't have to pull off a miracle in order to win these two games. They don't even have to play good. They can just play average football for them, and they'll win both games. So you know how like you go into most coaches, they have that cliche. They're like, oh, we got to have a good week of practice. We got to protect the ball. We got to do like UNLV can have they don't need to be perfect in practice this week. They can commit a couple turnovers on Saturday. They can blow a few coverages on defense, and they can still win. Like they have a wide margin for error. So I think that's what gives me the most confidence. I think you're going to get your dreaded matchup of they got to beat Reno to go to the bowl. So I think you're going to get that in 2 weeks.
Well, I will tell you, you're right about that. They are better than the two teams that they're about to face. They simply need to show up, not trip over their own feet. And additionally, for me, they need to get to the second half. don't go into the locker room tied. You know, don't make this to where it's a one possession game or you need to make a play in the fourth quarter, you know, because that's when you're going to tense up. Any team will tense up. You know, I'd say come out guns a blazing, win the game right away and call it a day, Michael.
Any concern for you that they just haven't won a game in 6 weeks?
Yeah.
You feel like you lose some kind of some of your edge and you kind of forget how to win when you had, they haven't won since what I'd have to look up the last game they won, but mm-hmm. It's been a long time.
I would agree with you. So hopefully the next time we talk, we're going to be
setting up that Reno game.
Setting up the Reno game or booking our plane tickets for a bowl game or whatever it is. But for Mike, I'm Ray, and thank you everyone for listening to our podcast. Thanks, man.
Cool. I will send that over to you like in just a few minutes.